Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 19th day of February, Anno Domini 2022, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 9 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things you choose, nothing loose, get off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. First bit of news, Dave Enright, one step ahead of the law, somewhere in the Southwest. And we have the redoubtable Michael Oden sitting in for him, and we're delighted to have him. And you can, of course, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Google has announced early access to a new version of Chrome OS called Chrome OS Flex. The new version of Chrome OS, designed for businesses and schools, is designed to run on old PCs and Macs. The operating system can be installed within minutes, according to Google's blog post. That doesn't include downloading, and I'll talk about that in a minute. Google says that Chrome OS Flex will look and feel identical to Chrome OS on a Chromebook. It's built from the same code base and follows the same release cadence, as they call it. It did say that some features may be dependent on the hardware of the PC you're using, including things like always-on Google Assistant and Android phone syncing. That's fair. They didn't make the hardware. So if you're going to try this, keep an eye out. Google recently bought Neverware, which previously sold an application called Cloud Ready that allowed users to convert old PCs into Chrome OS-like systems. That set off speculation about where we might see the next Chrome OS and its future in the PC space. Since that acquisition, Google notes, we have been hard at work integrating the benefits of Cloud Ready into a new version of Chrome OS. This appears to be Google's first step. If you want to try out Chrome OS Flex for yourself, you can learn more on the Chrome Enterprise website. I've got a link to that. I'll have Steve post it shortly. Note that the OS is still in early access mode, so you may encounter, you will encounter bugs. You can boot it directly from a USB drive if you'd rather poke around before installing it on your machine, but also be aware that that's slower because it's compressed on the USB drive, and also the USB data pipe is slower than a hard drive would be, so it'll be slow. Interestingly, end-of-life Chromebooks might also be able to benefit, although Google doesn't recommend it. Users with Chromebooks that have hit auto-update expiration, or AUE, end-of-life, really, have been installing Chrome OS Flex with relative success, according to both 9to5 Google and Reddit, reporting that Flex works well on some Acer, Asus, HP, and Lenovo Chromebooks. The process of installing Chrome OS Flex on your old Chromebook is not as straightforward as with Macs and Windows PCs, though. At any rate, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Chrome OS Flex, Google Chrome OS Flex for older keyboards. And your choices are, gotta try it, might have to try it, I'll wait until it's out of beta, meh, just another Google F word, and other. So far we have 28 votes, and meh is number one, with might try it second, followed by just another Google F word. But we have, and of course, if you said other, we'd like you to vote in the poll. No, that is the poll. Wow. I should go home now and get some more sleep, because clearly
you're more tired than me, and I worked 8 hours, hours ago.
Either not enough coffee or too much coffee.
No. I don't know what too much coffee even means.
You gotta run to the bathroom too often.
Oh, that's what it means. We'd like, if you said other, we'd like you to go over to the forum, not the poll, the forum. At soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. Select the poll, and the second poll down, Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 19 Feb 22, Google Chrome OS Flex for older PCs and Macs. And, of course, you should give us a call about this, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. And I'd love to have people vote in the poll. That would be delightful, quite honestly. One of the things that you'll find is, at least for me, when I downloaded it, it took quite a while to download. I believe they
even on super high speed internet.
Even on super high speed internet, there were clearly a whole lot of people downloading it at the same time. I also had trouble uncompressing it, and I realized it requires 8 gig, an 8 gig flash drive. And on both of the Chromebooks I tried, it only had 6 gig free on the drive. So no wonder it wouldn't decompress. But, of course, I didn't figure that out till late in the evening last night, or perhaps I should say this morning, so which is one of the reasons I'm tired right now. So I haven't installed it anywhere yet. I'll do it differently. You can use a Mac, and the Mac I have doesn't have USB 2, only has USB-C. A USB-B, I mean.
Max, it should be A or C.
A or C, A. A, I don't have A.
Yeah.
On that one, it only has C, and I don't have a cable, which I probably should
buy.
It's
a dongle life. I've got three of them right now.
I see that. It's, yeah.
You know, because it's hard to find USB-C devices. You know, USB-C has been out since 2014.
Yeah.
And Apple started using it in 2015. We started using it almost exclusively in 2016.
Right. And everybody's using only USB-C on here.
That's very common on PCs now. Although a lot of PCs will give you a couple A's and some and C's.
Right.
There's usually that transition period.
Right. So I can't do it on my Mac. It doesn't work on Linux.
Yeah.
Neither of my Chromebooks has enough space available. So I'm going to have to steal my wife's Windows machine to create this.
Just an excuse to get a new machine. Honey, I've got to test something.
Yeah, right. That shockingly, that will not work.
Don't you miss the times when you were at a company where that was a valid excuse? Yo, boss, can you approve this requisition? We need to test this. Okay.
No, I was the guy who approved the requisition.
Oh, good.
So yeah, that's the one. I've said this for years. That's the one thing I miss about working is I loved my job. I loved 99% of the people I worked for or with. But I have to admit, the only thing I actually miss is
the university budget,
getting new computers pretty regularly. Yeah, that's the thing I miss. I was very spoiled for many years.
Well, every 10 years is regular.
No, every year was regular. All right, we're going to go to the phones. Our first caller is Tom from Fairport, New York. Hi, Tom, what's up?
Well, I finally gave up on Windows, and I've been waiting without a laptop for years, but my new Chromebook i7 came in. And I want to, run Linux on it, naturally, for running my QGIS, for some...
I'm sorry, Tom, there's something crackling in the background, and I'm having trouble hearing you. I apologize.
My CX9 came in, my Chromebook.
Yeah.
And I want to run Linux on it.
Okay.
And I'm looking at running it through native or through... Krypton.
If you've got a new Chromebook, you can just go into settings,
right,
and turn on Linux. You don't have to do anything other than that.
Yeah, that's running native, and I think it's working with my display better. I'm going to power wash this again, and start over, but I think native's the way to go. Yeah, I concur. Just what's running the pros and cons of doing it the different ways,
No, the way that Google has set it up, clearly native is the way to go. That's what I'm running right now. I can do pretty much anything I want. And in fact, because I'm running it native, I can install apps like Thunderbird or, you know, any of those things and run them as an app. I don't even have to start the Linux container. I can just double click on on the thing and start it up.
I ran it native at first, but I was tested running in its own root. I think native is definitely the way to go. It seems to be better.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah.
Go with native.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks. Yeah, it's one of the things that you can do nicely with Linux, with the Chromebook, is it runs Chrome applications, it runs Android applications, and it runs Linux applications. Now, you want an 8-gig machine to do all of those simultaneously, but that's the way the world works.
It's like all the OSs are doing that. Windows just added the Linux sublayer, so you can do Windows and Linux. The Mac is Unix already, so you can do Unix, you can do Linux. With the new Apple Silicon Macs, you can run iOS apps on your Mac.
Right.
And with VMs, you can do Windows on your Mac, too.
Right, right. So they're all heading in that direction. One of the things, of course, is that Chromebooks are mostly cheaper.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
I was going to say the term for a couple of years was that the web would be the equalizer.
Right.
Everything runs on the web. It doesn't matter your OS. Well, it turns out that if the web designers designed for Internet Explorer under Windows, it doesn't work very well under Chrome on the Mac.
Right, right. And I've seen fewer of them, but there are still some programs out there, some websites.
Pittsburgh Federal Credit Union doesn't work with Safari. We think it's the newest Safaris that added more security and anti-tracking measures.
Yeah.
So we've had several people that have had to switch to Chrome to be able to run the website for the bank.
Yeah. That's just lazy programming.
There are a lot of banks, especially smaller ones, that do that.
Yeah.
They probably contracted out their web portal.
Well, they've contracted out their web portal, and then the people who write it are only writing for Windows because they're using the heck is their framework?
ActiveX?
ActiveX, but it
the newer one.
Whatever it's called.
Well, and I think that's what's happening is because I can see a blank on Safari. You get a blank window, so you get all the headings, and then when you say look at account balance, there's a blank window. But on Chrome, there's just a fraction of a second of an icon loading and spinning, and I don't recognize that icon. So they're loading some third party portal engine that just doesn't like Safari, and I don't know what it is, and they got to fix it at the other end.
Right, right, right.
But the one thing that is nice is now that Microsoft Edge uses Chromium as its back end, it means that we're down to two major browsers, the Chromium-based browsers, which runs on everything, and Safari, was it KHTML? WebKit-based browsers, which runs on everything. So it's you only have two browser engines to develop for, so there's no reason not to make it work on every browser.
Right. But it requires a little extra work.
Yeah.
And that's the way that works. But the other thing I want to mention is that right now, at least, remember, this new Chrome OS Flex is in beta. So it does not run Linux apps. And it does not run Android apps yet. Because, it's...
Yeah,
it's early beta.
You may not want to run it on your main production computer.
You might not want to run it at all yet if you're not the sort of person who can handle problems. You certainly don't want to run it on any main machine. You certainly don't want to run it if you're not willing to reboot regularly and reflash the thing and reinstall it and blah, 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 blah. So, but yeah, it's I love the idea because it will provide a real alternative for old machines. The fact is that people are afraid of Linux. There's nothing to be afraid of, but people are afraid of Linux. But they're not afraid of Chrome OS.
Yeah.
And so if you've got an old machine that's just sitting in a corner, it won't run anything above Windows 7 or, Windows, it can't run Windows 11 or whatever. And you know, you just want a nice machine. The other problem is that Chrome OS Flex is never going to be quite as secure as real Chrome OS on a Chromebook, because Chromebooks have the TPM module and a couple of other things that they do that keeps them secure. And that security, that TPM module, is the reason you can't run Windows 11 either. So, yep. You know, you're going to find that you're not going to be nearly as secure on Chrome OS Flex as you are on real Chrome. But particularly, the real benefit is going to come from schools, I think, because, you know, we joke about the academic budget, but there are a lot of schools that have a lot of old machines that are not useful right now. Mm-hmm. And that's why many of them have gone to Chromebooks and are managing them. There's a management console you can buy that actually costs money, but not much.
When you have to buy 10,000 of them for your district.
Right.
Even, you know, $100 per unit is a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. But if you've got old machines that are sitting around and you can put a free operating system on them that you can then manage just like you manage the real Chromebooks, which you will be able to do, that's pretty enticing. You know, if I can pull those old laptops out of storage, because schools don't throw things away, even if they can't use them. If I can pull those old laptops out of storage and turn them into Flexbooks, I guess they'll probably end up calling them. You heard it here first. I think it'll
be... for a dollar commission, a dollar per unit commission.
That's right. You may use that name. It is copyright 2022 Nick Francesco. I will be leasing the name out. You give me a call. But yeah, so there's no reason not to do once it's out of beta. Obviously, the only people who are going to play with it now are hardcore geeks like us, people in schools, the management. Tech management people in schools who are, you know, want to prepare themselves for this. So the reality is that this is going to be, I think, a pretty big deal for Google. So far they're saying it's going to be, you know, free forever and blah 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 blah. We'll see. Google has changed their policies once or twice in the past. But we'll see. Right now, it's a pretty exciting new thing, particularly if you've got old machines that are sitting around. The other thing is, you know, I've been talking to a lot of people who take old machines and refurbish them to give away to, you know, refugees or whatever.
Yeah, we have a school in Africa that we help support.
Exactly. And they don't, they're on the one hand, they're grateful for anything they get. On the other hand, Linux confuses them. I won't say scares them, but confuses them. But every time we've given them Chromebooks, they're thrilled. So the ability to take those old machines and turn them into essentially Chromebooks, I think will be a big win for those sorts of organizations as well. So in the long run, I think that Chrome OS Flex is going to be a big boon to lots and lots and lots of people right now. Again, like I said, very, very early days. And I don't think we have any real idea of how far it's going to go, but it will go and it will go, I think, pretty nicely in terms of what people can expect from it in the future.
Yeah, I have an older machine. It's a Hisense from 2014 or 15 that I'm going to try to install this thing on eventually.
Yeah,
most likely, because it's
wait until it's out of beta.
Well, obviously, yeah,
or
but
at least farther in the beta.
What I think is kind of interesting is that this has been available for years from Neverware, but now that a giant company has bought them, they're really kind of advertising it more, and they'll probably get more popular.
Right. We've been talking about Cloud Ready for a long time.
Yeah, hopefully the Cloud Ready people got good signing bonuses.
Oh, man, I hope so.
They got the stake with the company.
There's a difference. It's easier to install Flex, and it has a few features or will have a few features that Cloud Ready never had. Because they were proprietary Google things.
Yeah.
And it's real Chrome OS, not Chromium OS. It's the real Chrome browser, not the Chromium browser. You know, there's nothing wrong with those things. It's just that people felt they were second-class citizens using them. But they were not, but they felt that. And now they'll have real Chrome OS, real Chrome browser. They'll eventually, as Google, you know, has said, they will eventually have Linux and Android apps, which they didn't before. And so it's really Cloud Ready 2.0.
Yeah.
You know, so easier to install, more features, much. It is a Chromebook. It is Chrome OS. So I'm looking forward to it. I think we all are. It'll be pretty interesting. It'll be pretty interesting. We'll see what happens. But we'll clearly keep us up on this. And maybe one of these days I'll bring in a Chrome OS Flex machine instead. Flexbook.
Yep.
Instead of a Chromebook. And we'll see how that works. But remember, you heard that here first. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 30 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And you can give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Here on this balmy Saturday afternoon. In Rochester, New York. More like barmy than balmy, but okay. Microsoft says it's planning to update Windows 11 Pro so that it will require an internet connection and a Microsoft account during the initial setup phase. The changes will mirror the same requirements Microsoft originally added to Windows 11 Home last year, meaning you won't be able to avoid Microsoft accounts by creating a local user account during setup. Microsoft has been increasingly pushing Windows users to join the use a Microsoft account since Windows 10, and this new change to Windows 11 Pro won't sit well with many hoping to avoid Microsoft's data and telemetry gathering in Windows. Microsoft is currently testing this change in Windows 11 builds, and it will likely roll out to Windows 11 Pro in the coming months. Currently, Windows 11 Pro users have been able to avoid the Microsoft account by disconnecting the PC from the internet during setup and creating a local user account instead. The new requirement means fresh installation of Windows 11 Pro will require a Microsoft account and internet connectivity during setup, and those hoping to avoid that will have to use a dummy Microsoft account to then create a local one afterwards. So do you have a Microsoft account? Do you really want one? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
They started this in 2016 with Microsoft Office, that they store your license code in your Microsoft account rather than the printing it in the box.
Right.
And that started with Office 2016, which we have found to be a godsend.
Yes.
Because people never can find their license code when they upgrade their computers.
Right.
But now that it's in your account, I don't remember my password. Oh, they have a forgot password routine.
Yeah.
That'll help. And then you can use that thing that you bought 6 years ago.
That's exactly right.
And heaven forbid you have to buy a new version.
Right. And if you are using Hotmail or...
Yeah, that's the other confusion. They don't know what a Microsoft account is. They just have Hotmail, yep. Or Live Mail, yep. Outlook Mail, yep.
Yep. Yeah, all of those are the same, really, Microsoft account.
Yep.
Are the same. They are Microsoft accounts.
Xbox. Yep.
any of those is a Microsoft account. Yep. So if you've already got one of those, you can log in with those. Now, if you have already logged into your machine with a non-Microsoft account and you then log in with your Microsoft account, you don't have access to all the stuff
right.
you created in the other account.
It's basically two users now.
Right. But you would be able to, if that new one of them will be the owner of the system and the administrator, you shouldn't be using that one anyway. So if you now log in with a Microsoft account and then go back to the other one and either share or copy all of the data to the other one, you can use the other one without being the administrator, which is safer. And it's all good all the way around. So
when my son was little, and we got him his first Xbox,
baby's first Xbox.
Yeah, I used my email address to set up the Microsoft account for Xbox because he was underage anyway.
Sure.
Now that's causing problems because he wants to buy stuff in his Xbox account, but it's my email address.
Yeah.
And we're trying to figure out how he can. Separate, because I use my Microsoft account for other things. And
right.
How do we separate those two different things? And the short answer seems to be you can't, and we're trying to find a long answer.
Yeah, right. So here's the thing for all of you folks with new children.
Yeah.
Create an account for them. Give them their own email address.
I still check it yourself, but...
I gave my daughter her own domain when she was born. Say about the second thing I did when I got home from the hospital. First thing was change your diaper again.
There was a really nice commercial from Google a few years ago about that, where they set up an email address for the new baby, and through all the baby's life steps, emailed that email address. Here's the picture of rolling over the first time and holding your head up and first steps and first day of school, and then give the kid the password, and they can watch themselves grow up in their email.
Yeah, it's really kind of cool. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Hilton, New York. Hi, Bob. What's up?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Great show. I really like your show. I listen to it every week.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so I got an external hard drive, a 2 terabyte, and I was using it for backing up videos and pictures and stuff like that. And I hooked it up to my big screen TV.
Good.
And wanted to just check out some of the videos, and it worked great. And the issue is there's a ton of duplicates on the hard drive. And I'm wondering, can you recommend a good program to get rid of the duplicates? I went online, and I was going to get CCleaner, but then I heard there was all kinds of malware with that program. And I was just wondering if you could recommend a good program to get rid of some of these duplicates on this hard drive.
Generally, no. There are a lot of programs that claim to look for duplicate files. And mostly what they all do is they'll bring up a list of your duplicate files and let you decide which one you want to keep and which one you want to delete. Well, you can do that yourself without running this program.
Right. But, yes, there are programs that will do that. They have names like Duplicate File Finder, Search My Files, Duplicate File Remover, Duplicate Cleaner. So you can use any one of those to do that.
And CCleaner
will do that.
It's more of a registry cleaner than it is a duplicate file finder.
But it will do that. It will do that as well. And I don't know where you read about the problems with CCleaner, but we found it to be a pretty good product.
So do you think that is still a viable product right now and those issues are behind them?
I think so.
There was a fake CCleaner in 2017 that was malicious, trading on the good name of CCleaner.
But CCleaner itself, if you get the real program, and you can find a link to that on securitytango.com.
Right.
And that is a link to the real program from the real manufacturer.
Which is now owned by Avast. When did that happen?
Right.
Which is owned by Symantec.
Right.
I'm surprised that Windows doesn't include some kind of utility for doing this. This is a very common issue, I would think, because, I mean, a lot of times when I back up my hard drive, the mistake I keep making is I don't take them off my phone when I'm done doing that. And so when I do it the next time, I wind up doing it a second time. So
right.
I got this, hard drive with a lot of really nice videos, but there's a ton of duplicates on it, and it's a pain.
That's almost the point. That's almost the point of a backup, is you have duplicate files. Each version that you backed up is the current version versus the previous version.
But when the old version is the new version,
then it shouldn't back it up again.
Exactly, but it does. Exactly. So, yeah, try CCleaner. That should do the thing for you.
Okay. They're not actually duplicates. They're triplicates. I mean, a lot of times there's two or three of the same file. Yeah. And, I mean, it's nice to watch them on the big screen, but if you have to see them two or three times, it's kind of a pain.
Right. So, yeah, give that a try. CCleaner should do the job for you. Make sure you have, might I suggest, you make sure you have a separate backup of everything before you start deleting stuff.
Right.
But beyond that, yeah, try that. It should work fine for you.
Okay, great. Thanks, guys. I appreciate your efforts. Great
stuff. Thanks. Have fun.
Thank you. Take care now.
Bye-bye. There was an issue in last October 2021 where someone got into the code repository for the real CCleaner and added a malicious module.
Right, but that got taken out pretty quickly,
yeah.
So, yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Doug from Irondequoit, New York. Hiya, Doug. What's up?
Hey, quick question here. I'm trying to help a friend with a Mac, and she told me that somebody has disabled some updates on the thing, and sure enough, I'm looking in Firefox where it says we're at version 78.4.1 ESR.
Okay, that's
why. But this is not connected with her work in any way. So how is this disabled, and how do we update it?
It's not disabled. It's an old version. The ESR versions are extended service release, and they are intentionally stopped updating because they're only compatible with old system versions. And so if you have a newer system version, you can get a newer version of Firefox. But do you know what system version she's running?
I was just going to ask you how to find that out. I'm not a Mac guy.
Under the Apple menu, choose About This Mac. So Firefox 78, I believe that still works with 10.11.
Yes, this is El Capitan 10.11.6. Holy smokes, aren't we like five versions behind here?
Yep. Yeah, we're at 17 now.
Holy smokes.
Who's laughing in the background? Yeah.
That's okay. Nick. I can't tell you how many times I've seen this and had the exact same reaction. I'm laughing with you, not at you. Believe me.
Now, the next step is what OS the computer can go to. Also, in that about box, it will say what model computer it is, and there's a maximum system version models can use. And so
we're at MacBook Pro mid-2012 velocity. What else do you want to know here while I'm looking at it?
Mid-2012. Let me see what the maximum OS is. 10.15 is the maximum OS. I wouldn't install that unless you have at least 8 gigs of RAM or more, which that about box will also tell you. Your RAM and your storage.
Memory, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got six installed, 6 gigabytes.
Yeah, so it's trying to load a newer OS would probably slow it down.
Significantly at that point.
Yeah. 10.13 would probably be okay with 6 gigs of RAM. Then you could run a newer version of Firefox. Let me see what the current system requirements are.
Okay. Sounds to me like Torch is a good resource here at the moment. So
You need 10.12 or later for the current Firefox. Yeah, so if you install 10.13, that should be okay. You may need to check other third-party programs to see if something else may need to be updated. So the irony, same thing in the Windows world, the OS upgrade is free, but then you may need to buy new programs because your old programs may not be compatible with the new OS version.
Right.
And it's mostly Microsoft and Intuit programs and Adobe programs are the ones that are most fragile about upgrading OSs.
Gotcha. Now, if I were to hit software update here, will it actually give me a choice of which version to install?
No, because there are no updates left. You need to install an upgrade.
Oh, an upgrade.
And it's beyond the upgrade time frame because there's the newer OSs are already out that computer can't take. But I can post a link to getting older software versions
so
you can download 10.13.
And, of course, if you don't feel up to that, you might want to take it to a vendor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
An approved vendor and have them do it for you.
Is that Dave Enright still got a store?
No, but he wouldn't have done Macs anyway. There, you might go to what's the place called? Mac Ave would be the okay. place to go.
Yeah, I know
Ask
them.
Ask for Steve.
They're pretty good.
They're pretty good.
Gotcha. Okay. Or I just ran across an article I haven't read that said, you can install Ubuntu on your old Mac. I'm like, ooh.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. And the big thing about any Linux version is that it will update forever. It will upgrade forever. You can always install a new version of Ubuntu or any mm-hmm. Linux system. And 6 gigs on a Mac will give you a pretty decent speed and capability. Now, mm-hmm. again, depending on what your friend runs, she may need to learn some new stuff. For example, you don't run Outlook. You run Thunderbird or something along mm-hmm. that line, right? But she can do all the same things. She just needs new software to do it.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't hard for me. You guys helped me through it. So,
yeah.
All righty. I appreciate the insights here.
All right. Have fun.
You too. Bye-bye.
And, of course, eventually he'll be able to put Chrome OS Flex on it.
See, everybody needs to be the guru to somebody.
Exactly right. That's exactly right. And yes, as we've been saying, old machines don't necessarily have to die.
Yep.
They can be resurrected with, you can't run a newer version of, not iOS, Mac OS on an old machine, but you can run Linux. You will be able to run Flex. You can maintain that old software, and that's what we've been doing, as we were saying, giving them to charitable organizations. You cannot legally give them your copy of Windows. So you can, and you know, that old machine just isn't going to be secure. You can't do it in good conscience either, but you can put Linux on that machine. You'll be able to put Flex on that machine and get a lot more life out of that old hardware.
Yeah, if you get a license transfer statement from Microsoft, you can give them your
Windows. Yes, you can. Yes, you can, but you have to get that statement.
And you got to find who to get it from.
Exactly. You can do it legally, but you can't just hand them your machine.
There are hoops and jumping involved.
I'm too old to jump through any hoops at all. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Batavia, New York. What's up, Mike?
Well, first, my testimonial. I bought my printer from Mac App. Works great.
Thank you.
Another unsolicited testimonial, ladies and gentlemen.
No, well, I had to go to a backup list this weekend. Right away, I thought of you, you don't have enough, you know, you can't have more, you know, too many backups.
Right. Okay?
I had to go back. Now, the way I do it is I clone the whole disk, right?
Right.
Now, before I clone the clone becomes my C drive, so it's verified. So what happens is I go to the drive that I'm going to wipe out anyway, you know, everything I want when it's going to go away.
Right.
And I run C tools on it, Seagate tools,
mm-hmm.
okay? Is there a better thing to verify? I use the long generic test on it, but is there something better that you guys use?
Is it a Seagate hard drive?
Yeah, I the only reason I buy them is, you know, it goes with the, you know, it goes with the I mean, it'll work on any drive supposedly. But I go with Seagate because I've had good luck with them, and drives now are so cheap. You know, these are the conventional, you know, disk drives, and they I pick them up for $16 a piece, brand new Seagates, you know, so
right.
Yeah.
If it's a Seagate drive, then the Seagate tools is a very good product to use.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely. Right. I mean, it's designed by the company for their drive, so you know, it doesn't get a little any closer than that.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you very much. Bye there.
And send me an email to where you're buying drives for $16. All right.
His name was Joe, and he was parked behind the Rite Aid.
Yeah. The cool thing was he had a thing on his fob that opened the trunk for you.
Yeah.
So
see, now the really cool one is the button that closes the trunk for you.
Right. I don't know where this is from. Penny is her name?
Florida.
Florida, pardon me. Pardon me. All right. Excellent.
Florida,
Penny?
Florida woman.
I am from Rochester and presently from not so sunny Florida. How are you guys?
Yeah, not so sunny up here either.
I know. I've been listening. So I need help with ebook template. I would like to believe that I'm reasonably computer literate, but this is my first ebook, so I thought I better go with the template. But on the other hand, I do want the freedom of laying out the size of my photos or videos, or actually even my text, everything is pre-written and saved. I wanted I suppose an ebook template which I can easily adjust to my needs, because I don't even know how many pages I'm going to have until I'm starting to lay out the pages. And a lot of them are restricting even the pages that you can only have 5 or 6. So can I bring extra pages? So I just need some starting point. What would be a good template for an ebook?
Right. There are several templates.
Several. I found, which one did you find?
I looked at some of other ones, and I just didn't really care for them. So it's some text-wise, it's somewhat specific. So that's why I have to put in the book what I have pre-written.
Yeah, fortunately, there's a lot of free ones available in addition to some commercial ones. So you can try several of them to see which one you find that you like.
And because they're free, it's easy to try and move on.
Yeah.
And then I should be able to add extra pages if I need them?
Almost every one of these products will allow you to add extra pages, yes.
Oh, because I thought they were, the ones I looked at, it seemed to be limited. So that's good.
Maybe you downloaded a trial free and you get 10 pages free and then you have to pay if you want more pages.
But there are a lot of free templates that don't have that limitation.
Yeah.
And then they are all acceptable by other sources for distribution purposes?
Yeah, most of them will do both ebook and Mobi, which are the two most popular ebook formats.
How about Amazon?
Amazon is Mobi.
Oh, okay. All right. Quickly, one more question, may I?
Yes.
Okay. If I am writing on my laptop opposed to my iPad or what? Foreign language. Although LibreOffice is telling me that it does have foreign languages, but I'm talking Hungarian. So Hungarian has extra vowels, and even if I switch to the Hungarian, it still doesn't have me the extra vowels because it simply does not exist on the keyboard, and I've been working on it for a long time, and finally I came up with an idea, and I just need your approval if this is going to work. What if I can find a Hungarian keyboard and I try to plug that into my laptop and then make the necessary adjustments in the control language, and then I get those extra vowels, because that's my problem. And I can switch my American keyboard into Hungarian, but then I don't see it.
Right. So, yes, if you had a Hungarian keyboard, plugged it into your computer, then change the keyboard in your operating system to Hungarian, you would be able to use all of those. You should be able to use all of those extra things.
So my other thing is that I've been all over Staples and Amazon and Best Buy's website, and I very specifically write it in their search bar, Hungarian keyboard. And guess what? They bring me up 20, 30 keyboards, and none of them in the description is Hungarian. So,
do you have a friend in Budapest?
Yeah, exactly.
Have them go to their store and then mail you one. That may be the easiest way. I found one from a company called Lexilogos.
Really? Listen, let me tell you something funny. You know how in the Google search bar, we have microphone now, right? Of course you do. So when I speak Hungarian into it, right? It lights up some really gibberish, because the way with the English pronunciation, it hears it. So that's what gets tied up. and not the actual Hungarian.
Right. You have to switch the language in Google to Hungarian.
I have. And again, it won't be able to do it because those extra vowels, they don't exist. I'm trying it. If any of you do speak a different language, speak it into your Google search bar, and you will be surprised what you come up with for spelling. Anyway, thank you so much for helping me.
All right. Good luck. Thank you, Penny.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. I love to see people publishing books.
Yeah.
And online. I've written four, and they're still selling, which is great. All right. That music tells us you wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense, but you're not smart enough to learn from that. We have a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. That's Soundbites. We're going to have Steve Ray. We're going to have Michael Oden. We're going to have me, Nick Francesco. And we're going to have you. You'll be able to give us a call. In fact, you can call us right now and wait on the line at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Take a quick bio break, and we'll see you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Did you put the sound back up?
Yeah.
Okay. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. The year's first Chrome Zero. Yes, we're back to Chrome. This is the browser this time. The year's first Chrome Zero day can lead to all sorts of misery, ranging from data corruption to the execution of arbitrary code on vulnerable systems. Google on Monday issued 11 security fixes for its Chrome browser, including a high-severity zero-day bug that's actively being jumped on by attackers in the wild. In a brief update, Google described the weakness as a use-after-free vulnerability, as so many are, in Chrome's animation component. This kind of flaw can lead to all sorts of misery, ranging from corruption of valid data to the execution of arbitrary code on vulnerable systems. Such flaws can also be used to escape the browser's security sandbox. To fix the animation problem along with 10 other security issues, Google released Chrome 98.0.4758.102 for Windows, Mac, and Linux due to rollout over the coming days or weeks. So if you haven't updated, you should update immediately by going to the Chrome menu in your Chrome browser, then Help, About Google Chrome, and doing the update. Given that a zero day is under active attack, updating Chrome should be done ASAP. Monday's update also plastered over four other high security use-after-free flaws found in Chrome's Web Store API, File Manager, Angle, and GPU. As well, the company addressed a high-severity integer overflow in Mojo, plus a high-severity heap buffer overflow in Tab Groups. Finally, Google patched a medium-severity issue with inappropriate implementation in Gamepad API. This is Chrome's first zero day of the year, and more are sure to follow, but at least we've made it into the newish year 10 more days than we managed in 2021 when the first bug to hit arrived on February 14th. Last year delivered a total of 16 Chrome zero days. Here's hoping this year sees fewer. Are all of your Chrome browsers up to date? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Every program on every operating system has issues because they're all written by humans, and that is life. But if you have not updated Chrome this week, you should do so immediately. Zero-day attacks mean that it is an active exploit out there in the wild. Machines are being taken over even as we speak. So if you have not done the update, do it now. If you haven't done the update, or think you have done the update or whatever, you can always, of course, still just go right to the Google Chrome menu, the three dots in the upper right corner, help about Google Chrome, and you'll see that you've got your update button right there, and you can do that.
Steve Gibson on Security Now keeps nagging at the media for overusing the term zero day. That in the public media, whenever they announce a bug fix, they always claim that everything is a zero day.
Right.
No, a zero day means there's an active exploit against it. It's not just a bug we found.
Right, right, right.
There could have been a zero day you didn't know about, because if you found it, someone else could have too.
Yeah. There's no reason not to do the little check. It only takes a minute, and the download and reinstall are not. You don't even have to reboot your computer.
So, although you do have to restart Chrome.
You have to restart Chrome, but you don't have to restart your computer.
For some people, that's why they never get the updates, because they've never restarted Chrome.
That's exactly right.
Got 147 tabs open and just where I want them.
Right. Well, you know you can
There's an option.
Create a tab group now.
Yep, and there's an option to reopen all your old tabs. Safari has that also.
Right. So you can create, yes, and you can do all kinds of things now to your device. And so there's no excuse not to keep your updates, well, updated.
Yep.
So that's important. We have to remember that this is true for every operating system. I still hear people who think their Macs can't get viruses or have an issue of any sort. And I remind them that they can, particularly if they're using, well, any piece of software.
Yep. Why did it break? Things break.
Things break. It just happens. You've got to understand human beings are human, and therefore they will make mistakes in their programming. So, and even if they were written by machines, those mm-hmm. machine codes are written by humans. So,
because getting it to market is more important than making it perfect.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Which is, again, paradoxically, one of the things that makes Linux so clean is, A, people fix the problem they see and they make sure that problem isn't going to be another problem, because mm-hmm. they're not getting to market. They're just releasing a fix.
Yeah.
And they have pride in that fix because it's got their name on it. And in addition, there's 100 million eyeballs who look at that fix and say, oh, you missed this, or we'd love to have you add that, or, you know, that's sort of fair. So,
and the big problem is that there's so much interaction between so many different modules that Microsoft has been having a problem with the print nightmare. Yeah. It's becoming a print nightmare. Every month there's a new fix for the print nightmare bug, which allows bad guys to usurp your printer controls, because there's a feature built into Windows that if you plug your printer into the network or to the computer itself, Windows goes, hey, a printer, I'll set it up.
Yep.
So the bad guys can mimic a printer with bad software, and Windows goes, hey, a printer, I'll set it up, and install the malware.
Right, because what happens is when it says, I'll set it up, it queries that device to say, do you have a driver for me?
Yep.
And if it doesn't, then it goes out to the network to find a driver. But first it asks the device.
Yeah.
So if the whole point of your device is to install bad software, when Windows says, do you have a driver, you say yes.
Yep.
Here's my driver. Okay, I'll install that. Bing, bing, bing.
And because printing is such a low-level thing in the operating system.
Right.
The bad guys are using it. They must have just reams of vulnerabilities they've discovered. And as soon as one gets patched, they just move on to the next one.
That's exactly correct. That is exactly correct. So you really have to be aware of these things and be careful about them. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller, maybe, this is a different Tom. Tom from Brighton, New York. Hi, Tom, what's up?
Yeah, hi, good afternoon. So I've got quite a few CDs that I've been copying, you know, to my drive, and I want to get up to the cloud at some point. But, you know, it takes time to copy these, each one separately. Is there, I'd like to rent, if possible, a CD reader that can copy the CDs much faster, like, you know, 10x or however fast they can go. Do you know a place that I could find a machine like that that not only would copy faster, but also where you could load a whole stack, say 10, 20, 30 CDs, and let it load them, you know, automatically and copy them to a hard drive or to the cloud?
There used to be a whole bunch of things like that.
Well, they went the other way. You have one file on your computer, and it burns 10 CDs at a time.
Right.
A lot of it isn't the CD drive, because most of the CD drives are like 50X. It's the interface, and they're using a slow USB 2 interface.
Right.
If you can find one with USB 3 or even Thunderbolt, then that would be a lot faster importing those disks.
If you have a USB 3 or a Thunderbolt connection
on your
machine. Yeah,
faster interface on your computer, too.
Yeah, but again, I'd like it to also be like a carousel or, you know, automatic feeder that would drop each CD.
There used to be ones for floppies like that. I even knew a guy, Kevin Kondo. He built one out of Lego Mindstorms.
Nice.
That it would stick a disk in, and then when it came out, it put the next one in. There are commercial ones. There's one called the Rip Station. No, but that's for writing disks. It writes disks and then prints a label on them.
Yeah.
I'm going to see if we can read or import might be the word it wants.
Yeah. But I understand what it is you're trying to do, and I get it.
Just trying to save time, really.
That's when you hire your nephew for a buck a disk.
Right.
In fact, there were companies that did that in the early days of ripping CDs. For a buck a CD, you send them your stack of CDs, and they send you back a hard drive.
Yeah, that's almost worthwhile, I think, Well, my nephews are too old for that at this point, unfortunately.
If you have
never too old to make money.
If you have multiple CD drives, many programs will allow you to rip them simultaneously. So then it's just the number of interfaces you have to plug in.
Right. Okay. Well.
Yeah, I'm searching for automatic ripping machine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're automatic duplicators, but that's the opposite of what you want to do.
Right. Yeah, I don't want to write CDs. I want to just copy and put them on a
Read-to-bang,
file.
Yeah.
Here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found a Reddit thread. Somebody's got 3,000 audio CDs they want to import.
I just got a few hundred.
someone wrote a script, and you plug in 10 CD drives, and it keeps reading them in.
Right, but you still have to change CDs by hand.
Yeah, but 10 at a time, or however many disc readers you buy.
Right. This is an interesting question, and at the moment I don't...
Okay. Well, that's your homework assignment then.
Yeah. Or if somebody already has one, that would be nice.
Yeah, if somebody knows of one, give us a call. Kronos. Automatic DVD CD disc ripping station.
That's Kronos, CHRONOS.
CRONUS.
Oh, CRONU. Okay.
And it appears... It appears to be, the Kronos Automatic DVD CD Disc Ripping Station Data Archival System with Built-In PC, only $5,000.
Yeah.
It's on Amazon for
$3,300. Cheap at half the price.
Yeah. Well, the question is, can you rent this thing like this, or or somehow commission somebody to do it for you using that device.
VinPower makes one for only $700. Yeah, it doesn't look like these things are going to be cheap. I don't know.
Check the return policy.
Yeah, right. I don't know what to tell you. The thing to do is call around to the very few places left in town that sell stereo equipment and stuff, and see if they have anything.
Maybe like Rowe Photo or some of the photography places that will take in stacks of DVDs and give you a digital tape or digital file.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, thanks for the tips. And keep researching that for me, okay?
Yeah. I got nothing else to do. Thanks.
All right. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye. Yeah. It's a great idea. I mean, it's a great thought, I mean, because God knows we've all got 100 CDs. But yeah, I don't know of a company that still makes those. You used to be able to take it to a place like Rowe, and they would charge you X to do that for you. I don't know what they charge anymore, or if they even still offer that service. One of the things that we are finding, of course, is that CD rippers CD drives in general are getting less and less common. I don't have any sort of external device except for USB ports on this Chromebook. He doesn't have any on his Mac or anything. You either have to have a desktop that you specifically ordered with a DVD player, and those are even getting rarer.
So, physical discs are on the way out with electronic media going. I did just find a company called Music Shifter, 69 cents per disc.
Not bad.
You send them all your discs, and they'll send you back an iPod full of them if you want, or on a hard drive.
Nice. I should do that. I keep telling myself I've got to rip all my old-time radio shows. I've got several hundred CDs.
Quick, before all the CD players are all gone.
That's exactly right.
Well, it was Andy Anacco on Mac Break Weekly always talks about ripping his discs in each best format. So first it was MP3s.
Right.
And then AAC came out, and that's a better format, so you ripped them. And then FLAC came out, so that's a better format. And then was it Ogg Vorbis?
Ogg Vorbis came out better yet.
And he re-ripped them all.
Yep. So,
Andy, really, just ripped them as AIF, lossless, and that's the exact CD quality. They can't get any better. Yeah, but it takes up 700 megs per disc.
Well, and I was having that exact same argument with somebody about old-time radio shows. And they were talking about having to re-rip all their stuff because now Ogg Vorbis is out. I said, but they're mono voice-only stuff.
Yeah.
You don't need high-quality audio. They aren't high-quality audio to begin with. So I'm not entirely sure what benefit you get. Ogg Vorbis can be a little smaller than MP3s, and I suppose when you have 300 discs of MP3s like I have, that would save you some significant amount of space. But in general, it's not it's just move everything over. Don't get crazy doing anything else with it. It's a little silly, I think. But yeah, so we'll see what comes of that. I have a 1 terabyte drive sitting around that I've been promising myself I'm going to hook up to something and do that with, and I haven't done it yet. I suppose I should. I can't. I was about to say I should put that on my to-do list. My to-do list is so long now. I have to scroll down for about an hour. It's like finding my birth year form.
And why do they always start with now?
Right.
So it starts at 2020.
Who's going to be online if they were just born yesterday?
Yeah.
Start with 1940 or something, will you?
And then you can go up and down as you need to.
Right.
But you start at 2020, and I got to go back 50 years.
Yeah, exactly. or 70. Anyway, the point is you should, by the way, if you have a lot of stuff on CD or DVD, you might want to consider moving it to another medium.
How about 8-track?
If you have 8-tracks, good luck. If you have floppy disks, I've still got a bunch of stuff on those Sony MD disks.
Yeah.
I don't. I have a reader somewhere.
Now there's a medium that never took off.
Exactly right. It wasn't not a bad thing either. You could put decent amount of music. It had a nice sound. It was. They were nice little devices
that nobody used.
That nobody ever used. And so I used them for backup for a while because I forget how much they stored. But back in the day, that was plenty. Obviously, not so much anymore. But yeah, so you really, if you've got a bunch of stuff on CD or DVD or heaven forbid floppies or MDs or any of that stuff, it might be time to look into moving it elsewhere. If you've got any device can die, any device can die. So if you've got a bunch of music on your phone that isn't anywhere else, or your MP3 player of whatever ilk and it isn't anywhere else, or your tablet and it isn't anywhere else, you might want to consider making backup of those things too. As we always say, you don't have enough backups, and that indeed includes other media. I found a small tape that I was able to play at a friend's house because he's crazy and still has a tape player. And there was a little section of my mother's voice, which just floored me. I mean, she died in the 70s. And so it floored me. I now have probably 800 copies of that. That's not something I want to lose anymore. And it's in every medium I can think of.
Yeah.
So if you've got stuff like that that you don't want to lose, and that includes pictures and everything, I know we're preaching to the choir for most of you, but there's some of you out there who have been promising yourselves to back up for years now, and you haven't done it, so go do it immediately.
We just saw a TV show where a guy finally admitted that he's paying for an extra phone line every month so he can call and hear his dead wife's answering message.
Yeah.
It's okay, just record it, but okay.
You could record it. That's exactly right. But yes.
Yep. I did find a company that will rent the $750 Acronova disc ripper for $100 a month.
$100 a month. That's not bad. That's actually not bad. Send me that because I've got 300 CDs to rip.
It's the $750 ripper if you want to buy it yourself on Amazon, or $100 a month if you only need it a month. And it will come down to that 30th day before you're going to send it back. And damn it, I got to get to this.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm trying to get all mine ripped before my computer that has a CD drive dies on me.
That's exactly right. Because it's a mechanical device and it will die.
And the lens just gets dusty. Sometimes, if you're really lucky, you can like take your vacuum cleaner and blow the lens off.
I was cleaning in the computer room the other day, which happens once every decade, whether I like it or not. And I actually found a CD cleaning kit that had never been opened. It's still not open. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 30 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites right here on the great member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. You gotta love Rochester. From my bones have frozen to 40 degrees in 24 hours. Great.
So that CD ripper, $100 a month to rent from this other company.
Yeah,
it's $63 a month on Amazon if you go for monthly payments. Then you can own it in 12 months.
You can own it in 12 months and rent it out to other people at $100 a month. make some money on the deal. Yeah. All right. I'm not entirely certain how much this next story hits our normal demographic, but it is important to know that these things can hit anybody. The Chinese-based app TikTok is sidestepping Apple and Google privacy protections to provide the company's Beijing-based parent company, ByteDance, full access to user data. The studies conducted by white hat cybersecurity experts that hack for the public good were completed in November 2020 and January 2021. The summaries of the studies, which just came out, suggest that TikTok is able to avoid code audits on the Apple and Google app stores. More alarmingly, the research found that TikTok is capable of changing the app's behavior as it pleases without users' knowledge and utilizes device tracking that essentially gives the company and third parties an all-access pass to user data. This is highly unusual and exceeds the abilities of U.S.-based apps such as Facebook, Twitter, and other social media platforms. These dynamic properties allow TikTok carte blanche access to your device within the scope of what the application can see. The TikTok browser not only has access to convert from web to device, but it also has the ability to query things on the device itself. It seems to me that ByteDance has gone to monumental lengths, possibly more than Facebook, Twitter, and other social networks, to conceal the inner workings of their app, said one mobile development expert. A spokesrobot for TikTok said that it adheres to App Store policies and that its product meets information security standards in the U.S., the U.K., Ireland, India, and Singapore, and recently received certification by the IOXT Alliance for meeting standards and commitments to cybersecurity and transparency. However, two studies examined TikTok source code in 2020 and 2021 and looked into how the app collects data related to contacts, device ID, and clipboard actions and conceals data being sent to and from TikTok servers. The studies uncovered a concerning lack of anonymized data. For example, TikTok reportedly uses device IDs for ad integration, which means advertisers can end up tracking people over time across devices and installs. Once one advertiser has device ID that's correlated, all privacy is gone. Also, remember, with any social media, if you're not paying, then you are the product. How secure do you feel on social media? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. I think the most important part of that whole story is the last sentence. If you aren't paying for the product, you are the product. Anything you get for free, and that includes Google, Apple, Facebook, any of those companies, except I think really Linux, because they don't have a central company that collects your data.
Red Hat.
Most Linux systems do have a just like every company does, where you can a box you check, or in some cases have to uncheck, about sending anonymized data to the company so that they can check their usage, mm-hmm. right? How well their products work. People have done an extensive amount of research into what every Linux distribution sends back, and they have said it really is anonymized, unlike many other companies. But this is particularly true of your phone. What doesn't your phone know about you?
Knows where you are all the time.
What you're doing, who you're doing it with, particularly if you're using one of those who's nearby kind of apps.
Yep.
Right? So you can get apps now. I think TikTok does this, Facebook, Twitter, who's nearby.
Yeah.
So you can say, hey, we should meet up here. We should do this here, whatever you're doing.
And quite frequently, those features are on by default.
Right. And so they not only know who you, where you are and what you're doing, but who's nearby and who you're closest to. So, you know, people, if we were running those apps, people would know Steve and I sit next to each other for 2 hours every week. We probably know each other pretty well. We probably talk in between those times. He doesn't know, you know, they wouldn't know how much I really hate Steve completely. I hate him. But they would think we were friends.
We're like Adam and Jamie on Mythbusters.
Exactly.
You work well together, but they really couldn't stand each other's guts.
Couldn't stand each other's guts, exactly. But, yeah, so, the reality is that these apps know a lot more about you than you think they do. I get a little thing from Google once a month that says, here's where you've been this month.
Yeah.
For the last 2 years, it's been two addresses.
Yeah. And the first time you get that, that's kind of neat. Oh, look at all the places I've been. And it knows all the places I've been.
Exactly. But and you can turn that off. At least you can turn off getting the report, I suppose. I'm assuming you can.
Because most of that comes from Google Maps.
Right.
So whatever your mapping program is, it knows where you are and how long it takes to get there.
It's exactly right. And where you've been and everything. So. It will know if Google wanted these data, it would know that every Saturday I come here, I spend 2 hours here, and then I go home.
And when my phone started reminding me of the restaurant I go to after sound bites, that got a little freaky.
Yeah. Partly because I
know where that restaurant is. You don't have to remind me.
Right. What I do like is that my phone will say, I will get a notice that says, you have in Google Calendar, you have a thing that says you have to be here in an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Given the current driving conditions, you should leave now. That I do like.
That was cool, yeah.
That I like.
Remember that story about the guy, was it England? He got 100 old phones in a little red wagon and walked up and down a street and Google saw the traffic, the phones running so slow, they thought there was a traffic jam and started routing everyone else around it.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. Hi, James, what's up?
Oh, yes, I have an inexpensive laptop, an Acer. It came with Edge S mode. What is that S mode? Does that limit your capacity of what you can do?
Yes. Microsoft has Windows S mode.
Mm-hmm. And it's supposed to be safe or secure.
Right. And what it does is it basically limits. Yes, it's supposed to be streamlined for security and performance. What it means is you can only install apps from the Microsoft Store. You must use Microsoft Edge for your browser. And there's a whole bunch of stuff you cannot do.
And only Bing is your search engine.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah, I see that. Hey, is on my other laptop I have Chrome. Is Chrome the same thing as Chromium?
No. Chromium is the open source version of the browser.
Mm-hmm.
What Google has done is taken Chromium and made a few little changes to it, actually mostly for the good, and turned it into Chrome. Actually, it was the other way around. They created Chrome and then took a few things out and released it to the general public as Chromium. It is open source. So the differences are minor, mostly how easy it is to do some Google things in Chrome that you can't do in Chromium easily, at least. So the differences are very minimal, particularly for the average user.
Yeah, also, on my other laptop, I have Google Chrome. Does that, I checked it, and it is updated. Does that automatically update, or do I have to do that?
It should give you notice that there are updates available.
Oh, I've never updated it.
Yeah, if it's not updating in the background by itself, most of them will.
Yeah, it'll tell you have to restart to finish the updates or something like that.
Right.
The next time you restart, it just does it for you. And
right. Well, that's Chrome OS. He's talking about the Chrome browser.
Chrome browser, yeah. You can set it to warn you, or you can set it to do it automatically.
Right.
Yeah, it gives me the warning, and I do it like in the morning sometimes.
Exactly. That's exactly what you need to do, and it should be fine.
Okay, thank you for your information.
Thanks, James. Have fun.
Theoretically, yeah. Chromium is less tracky than Chrome.
Theoretically, yes. Yes, that's one of the big differences.
Yeah.
And the Chromium OS and the Chromium browser are a little less tracky. You also can't do some things in Chromium that you can in Chrome. In terms of the S mode, we have a different meaning for the word S personally, but that's a different story.
A shorter word.
A shorter word. But it is designed for security.
And many times you can shift out of S mode into full mode,
right.
But it depends on the hardware. I posted a link about it.
Right. You can some. You're right. Sometimes you can't. The S is supposed to be streamlined, and what that means is you're locked into Microsoft stuff. That's not necessary. I'm not saying that's bad.
Is vetted before it. Makes it out
right.
to the public, which is usually okay. But every now and then, just like the Apple Store or the Google Store, bad things get through.
Right. When Chromebooks first came out, you were pretty much limited to the Google stuff. When you buy an Apple machine, you have only the Apple stuff on it. With Macs and with Chromebooks now, you can add other things if you want to go elsewhere. With S mode Windows, you cannot. Don't write to me. Yes, you can, but you have to break out of S mode and blah, 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 blah. If you're in S mode and you're an average user, you're stuck with everything Windows does. And again, that's not necessarily bad. Not saying it's bad, but it is what it is. And you need to be aware of that. If you're okay, many millions of people never buy anything that didn't come with their Windows machines. So for them, S mode is no different from what they do every day anyway. But for people who want to use other things, if you wanted to use Thunderbird or you wanted to use the Brave browser or you wanted to use, Evolution or some other program, you can't. You simply cannot. Photoshop, etc. You know, if it's not in the Microsoft Store, then you cannot use it.
Microsoft just sort of made a big announcement recently that they've lowered their cut to 1%. Apple charges 15%. I think Google's 15%. Down from 30%.
Right, I was about to say.
Yeah. So unless you make more than $1 million a year, then it's 30%. So Microsoft sort of touted they're down to 1% because no one uses the Microsoft Store.
<That's> exactly
There's not much in it. No one buys much from it.
Right. If you're in S mode, that's your...
No one knows the Microsoft Store is there.
Right. Although it's right there on the bar at the bottom.
It's that icon. You don't know
have
what it is.
Right. Right. But everybody's got their own store now. Apple's had one forever. Google's got one. Microsoft's got one. I suppose there are others that I don't know about or care about. But they've all got their own stores, and you have to be aware that it's there and that you can install stuff from it. Now, everybody's aware of the Apple Store. Everybody's aware of the Google Play Store. But many people are not aware of the Microsoft Store.
Yep.
As Steve said, and if you are in S mode or you are on Windows at all, there are many things you can download from there. Many of them you will have to pay for, but they are available. So if you're looking to add things that you normally don't have, for example, as James has an S mode system, I have to keep being careful, has an S mode system. He would might find things he likes in the Microsoft Store. So it doesn't hurt to do a search for the things that you want to add on the off chance, the very off chance, that they are available in that store. But it doesn't hurt to give them a try at least and see what that has. And it's convenient. I mean, you just say, I want this. Oh, click the install button. And there it is. You know, give it a minute and it's suddenly installed in your machine. So I'm not saying that it isn't a good thing. I'm saying that it is a limited thing.
And one of the things that people like about the Mac App Store is that it will work on every computer you sign into your App Store account with. So if you have five computers, you can install it on five devices. And most of the apps are also family sharing. So if you share your iCloud family with, mom, dad, and the kids, you can run that same app on all those computers. Some of the early developers hated this.
Right.
Because if you had a desktop and a laptop, you needed to buy two copies of the program.
Right.
But the people love it. And when you get a new Mac, you just go to the App Store and say download. And all of your stuff, you get fresh copies of everything.
Right.
And you don't have to find disks. You don't have to look for license codes.
Right. Google does much the same thing through their store.
Yep.
If I buy a new phone, everything comes down. If I buy a new Chromebook, everything comes down. If I put the Chrome browser on a new machine, everything comes down. So that is, again, and I'm assuming that Windows works the same way. If you buy a new S-mode machine, in all of these, you have to sign on with the same username and password. But if you do that, you get all your stuff automatically. And that's powerful. That's very useful for particularly the average user. I mean, one of the things that keeps me buying new Chromebooks is the fact that when I sign in that first time, I'm on very high-speed internet, as Steve keeps pointing out, so it doesn't take long. But once I sign in, I just sit there and wait, and suddenly all my apps are populated. Everything is there. My browser comes down with all my bookmarks. All the apps that I use come down. All the extra programs I use come down. Everything is there. Boom. Done. So with the exception of some of the Linux programs, I have to re-add those, but very rare.
Those foreign operating systems.
Those foreign operating systems. But in general, that works. And then, you attach it to your phone, you attach it to your whatever, and you're on your way. So those are the really nice features of these types of stores, sections of the web where you can download particular products and programs that are matched to your login username and password. Once you own them, you own them. You don't, like, and as Steve said, you don't have, you can't lose the media. There are no media. As long as you remember your username and password, you will have access to those products right on your desktop once they download. So many people like the idea of an S-mode machine, particularly for older folks or very young folks who don't break out of the mold, right, and who don't need extra products. And it certainly makes it easier for those of us who do support for them.
And there's probably a lot of people that don't put any extra apps on their computer.
Well, yeah.
Your mail program and your web program, that's everything you need. That's why Chromebooks are so popular.
That's exactly right. How many times do you talk to somebody with a Mac or a Chromebook or a Windows machine? And you say, what email program are you using? And you don't even have to ask. The answer is, I'm using Apple Mail, or I'm using Google Mail, or I'm using Microsoft Mail. Because that's what came with my machine, and that's what I use. What browser are you using? The one on my desktop already. Okay. That's fair.
What's a browser?
Right.
That right there. That's the browser.
How do you get to the internet? Oh, I click on the E. It's not even an E anymore. They're all just waves now. It's the blue wave or the red wave or that sort of thing. So, but that's
almost an E, but it's circly.
Right. there's a lot to be said for the fact that these things have become so easy to use. There's a lot to be said against it if you're the sort of person, and I believe many of you listening to this show are this sort of person, who breaks out of that mold and wants to add their own software or write their own software or deal with their own software. But if you're the sort of person who just wants to start the stinking thing up and do the one thing you want to do, then S mode is fine. Chromebooks are fine. And added to Mac is fine.
Yep.
You can do whatever you want to do with these things. And that's one of the reasons that I think Linux has not taken off the way everybody seems to think it should, is because you have to add all that stuff or go find it. Nothing appears on the desktop. Even if they've installed LibreOffice, even if they've installed the Chrome OS, Chrome browser, even if they, you know, if they've done all of that, it doesn't show up on your desktop. They're beginning to do that now. There are a couple that, when you boot up, you see the Firefox browser,
yep,
for example, on your desktop. But those are few and far between. And it's that that makes it easy to use a machine.
And yes, and we often forget what people don't remember. I was with a customer yesterday that we went to his favorite website and said, okay, so how do I make an icon for that? You click the little favorite button. Oh, what's a favorite?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. That's exactly right. Yep. I have a guy who I have told him, I don't know, 30, 40, 50 times how to create favorites on his bookmark. How to create bookmarks.
Yep.
Just plain bookmarks. And he doesn't get it. That's okay. I get it. He doesn't get it. That's fine. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Greece, New York. Hiya, Joe. What's up?
Hi, fellas. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I have two questions. One, are my contacts on my Android phone automatically backed up to my Google account on the cloud?
If you tell it to in the beginning or now after the fact, and depending on which contact program you're using also, it's like the Samsung contacts would go through Samsung's backup service, not necessarily Google's.
And they that is not set up automatically. Yeah. And if you move to a non-Samsung phone, you lose them.
Yeah.
Yep, I've got a Samsung, and so I would go to a Samsung somehow a backup service.
Yeah, you want to go into the settings and check message and check. Oh, it's been so long since I've seen a Samsung phone. You go into settings and I think backup.
Accounts and backup,
there
and
you
then
go.
Samsung Cloud.
Right.
Wonderful. Great. Second question. I have, a while ago, quite a few years ago, I bought a history book, a world history book that had a CD attached, and that CD was valuable to me, but I can no longer run it. I have Windows 11. Is there any software that can basically mimic the old, probably Windows 98, that would allow me to read that CD?
Well, reading the CD may not be the problem. It's the program on the CD. And
I see.
You'd have to know what kind of program that was and what it was written in.
Is this one of those encyclopedia things where it comes up with a whole program that you can then run and look at stuff in? Do you know the name of the history book?
No, it was, again, a world history volume that I can't remember the name, but it was not a series or not a set of encyclopedias, but
sometimes
a
if you just
volume.
Sometimes if you open the CD icon, there's a folder that's full of JPEGs or full of text files, which is the information that the program would show to you, so you could look at the pictures one by one without having the program itself. But yeah, you'd have to open the CD drive and see what it looks like in the disk.
Okay, good point. Finally, I said two, but I do have a third one I just thought of.
Well, hold on. In Windows 10 or 11, you can run older software if you tell the operating system that it's older software. And you would right-click on the program and select Properties, and in there you can tell it, run it as Windows 98. And I'm sorry, that's under Compatibility tab.
I'll post a link.
And Steve will post a link, but I'm sorry, we're done. We're done. That music tells me we're done. I'm sorry.
Okay. Thanks for a great program. Take care, guys.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Yeah, call earlier next time. It's the Chicago style of asking questions. Call early, call often. Indeed, that music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank Steve Ray. I particularly want to thank Michael Oden, who once again took time off from his Saturday sleep to come in here and run the board. We are honored and delighted to see him anytime he's here. I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here in the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you because it is only with your generosity that we continue to be solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?